U.S. Golf Association. This is DDGA Radio News.
The biggest disc golf event in history has come to an end, and it was capped off with a big shot and another big win from Eagle McMahon. And we are going to talk all things Glassblown Open today here on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how was your weekend?
Probably not as good as yours. I spent the weekend mowing the lawn and weeding the garden. I played some disc golf and did some course maintenance at a local course, but all at the same time.
It sounds riveting.
It was. Hashtag domesticated.
Yeah.
But I got a chance, luckily, to listen or watch most of the live coverage. So, yeah, it was pretty good. How was your week at UBO?
It was great. I'll tell you what, Emporia loves some disc golf. You drive around that town and it's just baskets everywhere. You drive by a little technical college and there's baskets. And you drive by a random little park and there's baskets. And you go out for a run and you end up at a disc golf course even though you didn't go very far. It's amazing. So
yeah.
Hats off to everyone in Emporia. And thank you for the warm welcome this week. That city absolutely rolls out the red carpet. It was just a great time, and we had some great disc golf. And we're going to talk about all that on the show today. We're also going to have the winner of the Glassblown Open, Eagle McMahon, join us in a little bit. And then we're going to talk about the Tim Selinski U.S. Masters. We go from the GBO right to a big major. So it's going to be an exciting week ahead, Sarah. What was the biggest thing? I mean, without getting too far into the women's side of the coverage, what stood out to you the most, maybe from a distance, about the Glassblown Open?
I mean, for the women's side, it was just so exciting. I mean, it was a nail biter down to the last couple holes, and it seemed like, I mean, we all know that Paige is a force to be reckoned with, but she certainly did not run away with it this time. And it seemed like there were, every time you looked at the live scoring or the live coverage, there was a different leader on the leaderboard. So it was just kind of, you didn't really know what was going to happen. And there was potential for Paige not to win for once this year. But as we'll talk about, she ended up winning by one. And was it by one? Now I'm looking back.
It was by two.
It was by two. Okay.
It was essentially by, yeah, I mean.
It was by one. Pretty much a throw. So, yeah. But it was really exciting for me to watch. And also on the men's side, came down to the last couple holes. I think, and we can talk about this more a little bit later, but the live coverage was probably the best I've ever seen. I really enjoyed some of the elements, like the picture-in-picture, the coverage of the women and the men at the same time, just trying to give them as much equal coverage as possible. That was great. So I obviously wish that I had been there myself, but it was really convenient for me to watch this time with all of the media that PDGA was doing, of course, all the media that Dynamic Discs was doing. And I felt like I was there in a way, except I didn't go to was not able to come to some of the extracurricular activities like the bonfire and the
I didn't even go to the bonfire. I wasn't able to get to the bonfire. I went to the block party though, and that was a lot of fun. I had some decent tacos, which I was surprised at getting decent tacos in Kansas.
I heard about those tacos. They had
spicy
carrots and potatoes in them. Is that right?
I did not eat those tacos.
Okay, never mind.
I had meat.
They sounded delectable.
Tacos.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask you though, do you know what makes a bonfire Swedish? They promoted it as a Swedish bonfire.
It started as the tradition when the guys from Latitude 64 in Sweden, I believe, first came over to the GBO. I think they started.
Okay.
I don't think it's
like a Swedish tradition that
maybe they burn pallets from IKEA. That would be the only thing I could figure out. But other than that, no, I think it was just where the tradition came from. So
gotcha.
And I swear I could smell that thing at my hotel. It was down the road at the county fairground, and I walked outside and you could smell it. So they were burning it up pretty large.
Yeah.
So cool. It was a blast to be out in Emporia. Really fortunate just to go, and thank you to everyone at Dynamic Disc. They put on a heck of a show out there. they really have that whole event locked down, and for having, you know, 9 courses and 1,600 people, I'm sure there are hiccups here and there, but you don't really hear about too many of them. So congratulations, and I hope everyone there and their staff is getting a lot of extra rest this week, because they certainly deserved it. So
yes.
Without further ado, let's get into the action, though. I mean, in the men's division, they played all 3 rounds at the Emporia Country Club, and for my dollar, this course is starting to challenge some of those other really well-regarded courses. I talked to Eric McCabe last week, 2010 world champion, Emporia guy. He actually designed this country club course, and the changes that he made to it, he's hoping to make it more like Winthrop Gold at the USDGC. And I think he did an excellent job of that. And honestly, like, the last 3 holes at this place are so exciting. That 16th hole with the island is just, it rivals hole 17 at Winthrop Gold in terms of just how you can have such a stunning turn of events on it.
Yep.
And anything can swing on it. And I think that's what you want out of a course. I know there are a lot of people who watch this course on coverage and maybe don't appreciate it. They see big giant hyzers, and they see guys like Drew Gibson throwing 600 feet and making it look so easy. And I will admit, I used to be in that same camp. And then I went out to Emporia a couple years ago and saw this course in person. And then I went out there again this year and saw it in person. And the subtleties that come across when you're there watching it live are a lot different than you can really tell on the coverage. So, I hope someday that more people can get out there and watch it, because I think you have more of an appreciation of how truly difficult and not just a big hyzer fest it really is. A lot of really, peninsula shaped greens, big skip shots that you have to worry about. You have to really worry about your placement at these courses. So it's not just like these guys are out there throwing super far indiscriminately and not paying attention to their landing zone or their speed or their angle or anything. There's a lot of nuance to it. And so I really just enjoyed being there for 3 rounds and watching this. And I have to say, like, before we even talk about Eagle and how he ended up winning this thing, I was really impressed with Drew Gibson. He has the talent. He's always been known as a long thrower. But for him to go out there and kind of keep it together and keep it on the top card for 2 rounds, I was really impressed. I think he's kind of maturing in that sense, in that he's starting to feel like he can hang with the big guys a little bit more. This mm-hmm. course really suited his strengths. He putt pretty decently. If he putt a little bit better, maybe shaved off a couple OBs, we might be having a different story today. So I was impressed by him, and just overall, there's just so many, and I was really surprised by the amount of highlights we got. We got Eagle did you see Eagle's throw in?
Yes, I did. The skip flick shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
That was nuts.
Simon's throw in on 16
from the
right?
drop zone, yeah,
from
round
the drop
2.
Zone.
And
yep.
then Macbeth threw in from like 150 feet for an Eagle. Insane rollers being thrown down. There are a lot of highlights out of this event. But the biggest highlight for me was final round. We go into it, and Ricky Wysocki and Drew Gibson are tied up by 1. Eagle McMahon's down by 1. He's last on the box. I don't remember exactly why he was last on the box. I'm trying to think back a few holes. He'd been last on the box for a few holes. Or maybe it was just from the hole before that, and he parred. I can't remember exactly, because they had all...
No help.
No, that's okay. They all birdied hole 15, so I think it was back to hole 14. Anyway, so Eagle is last on the box, and, Ricky and Drew both go for the island. Ricky hadn't gone for the island at all the entire tournament, and he was still in the lead by 1, so he didn't necessarily need to, but he went for the island anyway, and he missed. He went in the water. I think his disc may have clipped a tree. I couldn't tell exactly from where I was standing. So he splashed down, and then Drew went for the island too, which he had done the day before, and he landed on the island, but he hit really far left, and it caught an edge and rolled into the water, so he's out of bounds. And then Simon Lazat gets up, and he parks it on the island with a huge hyzer shot, because that's what he does. He's Simon Lazat. By this point, he was out of contention. He fell out kind of early during that round. And so then it comes down to Eagle McMahon. He's last on the tee box. And he goes and he walks right by me and a couple other people. And he's like, "Here you go, Simon." And he lines up the big Simon Lazat Heiser bomb shot that he hadn't practiced at all. And he went straight at it the first 2 days. The day before that, we'll talk about it in a minute, he had an out-of-bounds shot there. So I asked Simon about that afterwards, and Simon was like, "Yeah, I was looking at Eagle, and I was telling him to lay up," which I was shocked that Simon even said that.
Yeah.
Because that's not his game. And Eagle says, "Nope, I'm going to go for the huge Heiser shot, even though I've never practiced it." Goes up and over the trees, lands on the island, sticks the 20-25-foot putt, and it's a two-shot swing because he gets the birdie and the other two guys take a bogey. They pitch up to the island and then tap in their putts. And then he walks it in from there. I shouldn't say walks it in. I mean, he still had to convert. Hole 17 is a really difficult hole. He had a nice, really strong... I think he just threw a big hyzer off the tee around the gallery on 17. And then 18, his approach shot on 18 was tremendous. Used a nice forehand to really just kind of slide down the hill and put him to about 25 feet and connected for the win. And it was amazing. And, you know, the biggest thing with this event for me, watching it there in person, was that it was different than Eagle's win in Vegas. In Vegas, he had the lead going into the final round, and he pulled away early and was able to kind of, I don't want to say coast, but it wasn't as stressful. This one was different. Like, he had to take the win on this one.
Yeah, that one was more of a, like, just play safe and I'll probably get this one. But yeah, this one was in the moment decision. If I don't go for this island green, then I'm potentially, you know, might go into a playoff. Who knows what might happen on the next two holes. And this was sort of like a make or break in the moment decision for him it was great that it worked out for him. That's a very risky shot, but he had the confidence to do it.
And I think that's the best part of this whole situation. I don't think Eagle McMahon, if he does take that shot last year or the year before that in this situation, I don't think he lands it. I think we've seen this total shift in Eagle this year, now that he's getting the mental game on track to where, I mean, and the crazy part too, he goes and he lands that island, and I'm sitting there watching him on hole 17 on the tee pad, and he just is super calm. Like, he didn't look fired up, he didn't look emotional, he wasn't letting the moment ever get too big for him, and I think that's why we're seeing him start to win.
Yeah.
So it's really fun to kind of watch the evolution of Eagle McMahon before our eyes every week. And it was a great show. So congratulations to him. We'll talk more to him later when he comes on the show. So let's talk about some other things. I want to go back to Drew Gibson. On hole 15, final round, he almost had an ace. He crashed the chain so hard that basically the disc jumped out of him. And it was this huge momentum shift, like, in that he had it for this fleeting second, and then it was just came crashing down to reality. And I think that was tough for him. He was still really bummed about that after the round, because, I mean, he aces there, and at that point he was tied. That's at least one shot, because everyone's birdieing there. So it changes the entire complexion of that round. But on the whole, and, you know, talking to Drew after the round, like, he was still really pleased with where he came in. You know, this is his highest NT finish ever. And he knows that he needs to put together some other things. He knows that he made mistakes with the OBs. You know, he went OB off the tee on hole one, went OB a couple times in the middle of the round, missed some putts. And, you know, he even said, he's like, you said in one of your articles that I'm like 86% in the circle putting. You see the guys who are winning and they're at 96%. So he knows what he has to do. And if he can do that, I think we'll see him continue to contend. So that should be fun. And gosh, I don't know. There's just so many, like, there's so many little things we could talk about. The rest of the top 10, I want to go through and talk about the rest of the top 10. You know, we had Eagle took first, Ricky and Drew tied for second. Simon took fourth. And then Kevin Jones birdied 8 out of the last 9 holes. The only one he didn't get was hole 18.
Ridiculous.
And he moved up 4 spots to take 5th place. Grady Hsu went bogey-free to come in 6th. Colt Montgomery moved up 6 spots in the round to come in 8th. AJ Risley, he slipped down a little bit, but he tied for 9th. That's his highest NT finish ever. And then our last 2 guys in the top 10, I deliberately skipped them. It's the Nates. Nate Doss coming in 7th place in his first, really his first full term of the season. He had to drop out from the Memorial earlier this year from a shoulder injury. So it was great to see him back and playing well. And then Nate Sexton, he dropped down a little bit the final day. He dropped down 4 slots, but also tied for 9th. But the biggest thing I look at that top 10, and I see so many young players. If you look at Nate Doss and Nate Sexton, their birthdays are actually like 13 days apart, I think. I think Nate Sexton turns 33 this Friday, actually.
Nice.
So be sure to say happy birthday to him. And then Nate Doss turns 33 in a couple weeks. So I'm going to round up for the sake of simplicity and say that their average age between the two of them is 33. The rest of the top 10, let's see here. I wrote down their ages. Eagles, 20. Drew Gibson is 22. Ricky Wysocki's 24. Simon Lizotte's 25. Kevin Jones is 21. Grady Hsu's 22. Colt Montgomery's 23. And AJ Risley is 26.
I'm feeling real old right now.
Join the club. And but that averages out. Those 8 other guys in the top 10, their average age is 22.875. So roughly 23. So a 10-year age difference between the two Nates and the rest of the top 10, which on the one hand is super, I think it just says great things about the future of the sport. On the other hand, it says great things about how Nate Sexton and Nate Doss are still playing.
Yeah, agreed.
So we've got a lot of other, you know, young, just hungry players coming up. It's really exciting to watch. I'm excited to see what's in store for the rest of the season. I think before we maybe go into some of the OB things and odd, funky little scenarios that happened otherwise this weekend, let's talk about the action in the FPO, because like you alluded to, Sarah, it was not one of these runaway Paige Pierce wins that really on paper, looking at the courses beforehand, I figured it would be pretty anticlimactic, and it certainly was not.
Okay, so the women started at Cottonwood Falls, and in a Paige-like fashion, she shot the hot round, but only by one stroke because Rebecca Cox was on her tail. Paige shot a 53, and Rebecca shot a 54, which was pretty exciting for her, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. But
yeah, definitely.
Rebecca shot over 100 or nearly 100 points over her rating, which is incredible. And she's just one of those new players that we've been talking about for the past few weeks. So it was really great to continue seeing her on the top of the leaderboard.
And her sunglasses. I don't know if you saw her sweet sunglasses.
Were they aviators?
No, they're just, she just has like a bunch of different styles of sunglasses. It's kind of silly, but I did a little interview segment with her that I think we just put it on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Like she just has like, and she like put on the sunglasses. I mean, it was fun. It just got a little personality out of her, which is fun.
Cool.
So anyway, back to actual disc golf and not sunglasses.
It's very important stuff here. And then Lauren Butler, who is kind of a new name, she's been playing AM for the past few years and recently moved up to pro, but she's out of Minneapolis and she shot the third hottest round the first day with a 57. And then Lisa Fakus, well, so there was a 1-2-3-4 way tie at 58, including Lisa Fakus, who we will talk about because she was in the battle with Paige later on in the event. And I admittedly did not get to watch a whole lot of the first round coverage, but I mean, after looking at the scores, I wasn't very surprised to see Paige on top.
She had like kind of a big hero shot, I think on, I want to say it was like hole 16 or hole 17 there. It was like a 450
I did see that
footer that she parked for like, from, you know, 25 feet out and took an eagle.
And, yeah, I did see that. And she had like a bank shot that she called for her putt. Yeah.
Yeah, they have like that these baskets really hanging off a big like artificial rock wall there. It's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. It's like the climbing gym course. But that was insane. So she finished out 4 under in the last 3 holes there.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Well, I was hoping that she'd break 1,000, but her round was, you know, she wouldn't be unhappy. I wouldn't be unhappy about this. I hope she isn't either, but she shot a 998 the first round. So,
oh, it's really underachieving for her.
I know, definitely. So that was Cottonwood Falls. So then second round, we saw a little bit of a different side of Paige. She did not shoot as well as we know she can. And second round is really when I started getting a little bit more excited, and I was like, oh, someone else may win this weekend. And it seemed like every time you looked at the live coverage or the live scoring, someone else was on top. It was like, Sarah Hokum has the lead. Jessica Weiss has the lead. Emily Beach has the lead. Oh, Paige is back in it. Like, it was crazy.
And we need to talk about Emily Beach.
Oh, of course. Don't worry. I'm getting there.
I'm getting there.
So that was really exciting. Also, I've played that course at the Professional World Championship, so I knew that a lot better, and I knew I could relate to some of the shots that they were throwing and just really impressed. And one of the biggest course changes that I noticed is that the long grass is gone. Where the OB areas are on that stretch of holes, it's like 6, 7, 8, 9, I believe. And so that was cool. I was trying to figure out maybe why they did that. And it's probably a multitude of reasons, including I'm sure people lose a lot of discs in there. And so it maybe makes the rounds a little bit quicker because people aren't looking for their discs and trying to mark where their OB lie is. But so that was a little bit of a different look for me. And I feel like it also gives you more of a clear shot to the basket. On some of those holes, you have kind of a blind shot over the little hill. And so you can probably see a little bit clearer now, which I thought was interesting. But anyway, back to the players. So round two, Paige starts off with a bogey. She went bogey, birdie, double bogey, birdie, bogey, bogey, bogey. And what they're saying on the live coverage is she had played 7 holes and hadn't hit a par yet. She was either hitting a couple birdies, but a lot of bogeys. And that is not the Paige that we know and love. It just seemed like things weren't coming together. Her drives were off. Her putting was off. It seems like she lost confidence, or just started out with a lack of confidence in the beginning of that round. And I don't have any insight into why that happened. Maybe you have a little bit better of an idea of that. But I don't know. It was like kind of painful because we're so used to seeing her play so strongly, and I was just like, oh, Paige, like you can do this, like what's going on?
She alluded to it a little bit when I talked to her. I didn't actually talk to her after round two. I talked to her after round three, and she was putting pressure on herself. Like this is in the hometown of her sponsor, and it's a huge event for her. So I think part of that was maybe trying to go a little too big. She mentioned that after round one that she was going to try and get aggressive at Jones because she has the arm to do it there. And I just think she just didn't execute well and maybe probably put a little more pressure on herself to win this event than any other event, maybe outside of Worlds this season, I would guess.
Yeah. So that was disappointing to see from her. But, you know, she's human. It happens to all of us. She cleaned it up pretty well on the back nine, took a few birdies and one bogey, ended up with a 61. So not the hot round. She ended up dropping several places, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or 8 spots. So not very characteristic of her, but we did have some really good shooting rounds. We had Sarah Hokum shot a 57, Emily Beach, who we'll talk about in a couple minutes, shot a 57, Jessica Weiss shot a 57, and Zoe Andike, who we have not seen on the tour so far this year. Really happy to see her name on top.
Yeah, same here. I was happy to see her back.
Yeah. Really great to see them. And then looking down these stats, Lisa had a great round. So there was a definite mix up after round two, and I was really giddy for third round to start.
Yeah,
I had to
it
wait.
was exciting.
Yeah, I had to waiting all the way until 3 o'clock was a little bit painful. I was like, oh, what can I do to to make the time go by faster? Because I was really excited. So I mowed the lawn. But yeah, so
I don't
then
know
we
if that makes
moved.
time go by faster, but okay.
I mean, I listened to some podcasts. It was all right.
All right, good.
So then we move over to Peter Pan, and I love this course as well. And we start the day with a lot of just pretty boring golf, I guess. Paige, Lisa, and Hokum just started off par, 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 all the way down. And Paige just got on this birdie train starting on hole 8. She birdied, let's see, 5 of the middle 6 holes, 8 through 13, and then parred out. And yeah, she and Lisa Fakus almost had totally bogey-free rounds. They each had one bogey. And this is where the excitement came in. Oh, and also Sarah Hokum only had one bogey that round. But this is where the excitement came in, is I kind of thought Lisa had it in the bag. Paige was playing pretty strong, but Lisa had a few strokes on her going into this round, and it just seemed like she was pulling it together. She was making her putts. Everything was going really well. And then something interesting happened on, I believe it was hole 16. It's like a 500-ish foot hole.
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought this was interesting. Terry Miller and Robert McCall were talking about on the live coverage. So Paige throws out of bounds, like, 400, 450 feet down the fairway.
Like you do.
And yeah, of course. I always do. It's where I always throw
Oh
out of
yeah,
bounds.
definitely same here.
But they brought up an interesting concept that I hadn't really thought about before, is most of the time Paige's distance is beneficial to her, especially on these longer holes. But in this case, and I'm sure other cases, it's a detriment because she's finding OB areas or less than ideal areas on holes that most women are not finding because
Yeah,
she can
yeah.
throw so far. And sometimes it's women are not considering these areas because they're like, oh, I'm just going to throw as far as I can possibly throw and I'll never get to that road kind of thing. But Paige, because she has so much distance, has to worry about some of those, farther off OB areas that other women may not even come into play for them.
So interestingly
So,
enough, I have a little insight from Paige about that hole too. She,
okay.
I think that drive she just threw a big hyzer shot,
Yes.
and she said she just kind of sailed it. Her original approach on that hole is to throw a flex shot, to kind of I think keep it a little safer and maybe get it around the corner a little better. I think that's what she was saying, yeah. But she changed it up because of the wind, because she was afraid that the wind would mess with the flex shot too much and it send it OB, and she threw the hyzer shot and still went OB. So she was like, I did that to correct for the wind, and it was just kind of ironic that it still went OB.
Yeah, the wind can be tough. You feel like you're making a responsible decision to combat whatever the wind is doing, and then it blows up in your face, and there's sometimes just not anything you can do, and that's unfortunate. So that was a total nail biter. I was like, oh my God, what's gonna happen? And they kept switching back, of course, between MPO and FPO, and I was just,
Sure, you just wanted to stay on FPO probably, like it was, but it was all
of
exciting. Like there was
course.
so much going on at one point there
On
that it
both
was,
ends.
yeah,
Yeah.
it was very
Yeah.
exciting.
Yeah. So that kind of opened the door back open for Lisa. And, she was kind of the underdog. She hasn't had an NT win, and I was definitely rooting for her, especially because
Of course.
you picked Paige last week on our pick. So I was like, no. So Paige kind of opens the door again, and there's 2 holes left. And unfortunately, Lisa threw out of bounds on hole 18 and
Well,
ends
yeah,
up taking.
she hit a tree first and then hit OB, so it was just
Yeah.
it kind of went off the rails. She said she was
Yeah.
trying to do too much, which it's
Yeah.
understandable. Like you have a chance to maybe beat Paige Pierce, you're gonna try and do too much.
Definitely.
It's gonna
Yeah.
happen.
So that was just unfortunate to see. So she ended up taking the bogey 5, and Paige ended up just taking the simple 4. Par and won by two strokes. They both tied that round at 53s, 980 rated round, so nothing to scoff at. But man, I thought someone was gonna. Not that I want Paige to be taken down.
No, I know what you mean. But like, it's the upset story, the underdog story is always compelling. I mean, I'd be lying if I said there weren't times where I kind of wanted Drew Gibson to pull this one off just because it's different.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't think that. I think that's just human nature. I don't think that makes you like. We know you're not anti-Paige or anything. I'm not anti-Ricky or Eagle because I want to see someone different win. It's just it's more fun that way sometimes.
I just think the interesting takeaway from the FPO, just how it all ended up, is Paige did not play as well as she can, and she still won.
Yep.
Like, when does it stop? Like, this was a pretty close event, but in those events where she's just running away with it, is it going to be the same type of thing where, you know, we've got the year of Ricky and the year of Macbeth, and then people start playing up to their skill level and
there might be like a window of people needing to catch up.
Yeah.
I mean, Lisa was close on this one, and I think Lisa is one of the better contenders to keep getting that close. You got to remember, like, she hasn't been touring that much. This is only her. I don't even think she was on tour full time last year, really, until later in the year. So this is her first full year of touring, and you know, she's improving pretty rapidly, which is nice to see. I'm happy to see her pushing Paige, and I actually got to talk to Lisa real quick this morning, and she said it's you know, she gets to play against Paige more than other people do because they're in Texas.
Yeah.
So that's only gonna help Lisa's game too.
Definitely. Yeah. So rounding out. Well, okay. So first, let's talk about Emily Beach.
Yes.
So I have known about her. She's sponsored by Innova. She's a young player. She's only 19.
Yep.
And I don't remember where she lives. Let's see.
She lives in Iowa now.
Okay.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Born in Oklahoma, lives in Iowa. Yeah.
Okay. She's got a relatively low PDGA number. I think she's been a member since 2013, but she hasn't played a whole lot of big events up until now. She's played in a few Worlds Juniors Championships.
Right.
And word on the street that I have from inside intel is that she is. Even when she was playing juniors, she was just killing drives. Like, she can throw a mile, and just a really good player with a lot in her future. She's only 874 rated, and if you just look at the top 10 finishers for this event, she is the only one under 900.
Wow.
So...
Did you calculate her average for the three rounds?
I did. So she shot over, let's see. So it was almost 100 points above her rating on average.
That's phenomenal.
Yes.
In her first NT ever.
Yep, in her first NT. She's played Glassblown Open before, but as an advanced female. Last year, I believe she took third, and then she started playing Open. So... I can't wait. She unfortunately is not signed up for any large events, according to her PDGA page, coming up. But I think I read on Facebook that she's hoping to sign up for some more later this year. So I cannot wait to see what comes out of her. And she's lefty.
Yes.
So that's exciting. We don't see a whole lot of lefties in general.
I think other lefty women, Katka Botova.
Katka, yep. Is Paige Bjerkus lefty?
No.
I don't know why she's like...
I don't think she is. She's just a whirlwind, so it probably looks like she's...
Yeah, I don't know why I thought she was. Yeah, I can't think of any other left... I'm sure there are.
But they're not a lot who are out at a lot
or
of
on tour. No, not at all. But so the funny thing about that is I'm sure she did this more than once during the event, but at one point she had... I think it was a Peter Pan. She had a shot where she could have thrown a flick or a turnover lefty backhand, but I think the water was on her left and it was kind of a risky shot. So she just threw right-handed.
Yeah. She
and like
is
put it right
semi.
near the basket.
It's interesting. There's this like little trend of ambidextrous players right now. Like, and I talked to Emily real quick the other night about it, and basically it came from that a few years back, she, I think, I want to say she said she broke her wrist
Okay.
and she didn't want to stop playing disc golf. So she
Yeah.
learned how to throw righty. And now she
Awesome.
uses it when she wants to. There's actually a couple pictures if you go to like our Flickr page that our photographer caught. And I had to make sure that I put one like heading the article of her throwing lefty because these ones are her throwing righty, but I'm talking about in like the first paragraph of the article that she's a left-hander. And so
Yeah.
I didn't want to put her rant. I mentioned the ambidextrous part later in the article, but I didn't want to put that as like the header photo and throw people off.
Yeah.
But
Well, you could
yeah.
use Photoshop.
Just mirror, just
You
flip it.
just flip it. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
our little secrets. But yeah, I mean, it's so cool that she can do that. And I'm thinking about it now. So you've got her, you've got Jessica Weiss can do the same thing after her
Yep.
shoulder injury.
Although I haven't seen her throw, maybe, I mean,
She
I'm not
doesn't,
like.
I think it's more of like an in case of emergency thing.
Yeah.
And then Dustin Keegan, same thing after an injury.
Ah,
And
there you go.
I Zoe Andyke, same thing. She said now she also throws lefty as she was working back from an injury
Wow.
too.
Nice.
So it's kind of this fun little trend emerging.
Yeah, I know a few people that can throw lefty, but most of them when they tell me they can throw lefty, they're like, yeah, I throw right hand, backhand, and lefty flick, which is like no help at all because
That's
it's
how I am. I do
the
lefty
same thing.
backhand with righty flick.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
It comes
Yeah,
from baseball for me. Like
that's
standing as a right-handed hitter is the same stance as a left-handed backhand thrower.
I gotcha, yeah. Well, my left side of my body is completely useless. I can't do anything with it at all. So hopefully I never break my right hand or wrist or shoulder or anything like that. So there are some other women that I just wanted to highlight. Zoe Andyke, like I said, she finished sixth, plus five. Well, let me just go through the top 10 women and I can talk about them as we go. So Paige in first, seven down, Lisa Fakus, five down, Sarah Hokum, four down. And then it drops off a few strokes. So Jessica Weiss and Emily Beach tied at even. Zoe Andyke actually had a pretty big tie for sixth. Zoe Andyke, Valerie Jenkins, and Ellen Winboom. Like I said, really great to see Zoe back on tour. I hope her injury is feeling better. Valerie Jenkins, her first event on tour this year. Really great to see her. Did you get a chance to catch up with her at all while you were there?
I talked to her a little bit at the big players meeting
Okay.
on what night was that? Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, she seems to be doing well. You know, she's had a
Good.
lot going on, obviously, with her dad passing away, and then
Yeah.
they have their beer business and everything like that going. But she was happy to be out there and just getting kind of back to doing what she does. She's
Yeah.
doing a lot with the Women's Global event coming up too in a couple weeks. So
Oh yeah,
she's been
definitely.
busy.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm hoping we continue to see her out. I didn't check what other events that she's playing this year, but let's see. Women's Global. Oh, she's playing the Masters Cup, so we'll see her out
Yeah,
there.
that's like her and Nate. That's essentially hometown for them. I mean,
Yeah.
for Nate.
And then we've got a bunch of Disc Golf Pro Tour events on her schedule. So very excited. I hope
Oh,
she
and they're
can.
playing Zootown up in Montana.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh, that's right.
Cool.
Nate told me they're doing a collaboration beer with Big Sky Brewing up there, which is actually a pretty large brewery.
Oh,
So
nice.
good for
Very
them.
cool. Yeah, good for them. Ellen Widboom, love that lady.
Oh, yeah.
She shot really well. Her last round was 59, which was above her rating, but her last actually she played pretty solidly the entire time. Shot above her rating and ended up cashing, so good job to her. Madison Walker and Kona Panos tied for ninth at plus six, so things were pretty tight in the middle there. And yeah, so that was our top 10. So there were some women that played that I just from previous events and knowledge of their amazing skill, I was just a little bit surprised that they didn't perform a little bit better. I hope that sounded really nice because I'm very supportive of them. But Paige Bjerkus, I know she's a student, right?
So she's a student, and then when she wasn't out playing, she was working. Literally, she sold me a disc that I bought for my daughter at the Dynamic Disc store.
Aww,
like she was out there. She was out there working the entire time too.
Gotcha. Okay.
It was a busy week for her.
She's got it. Yeah, of course. So I was really looking forward to seeing her play. But she ended up cashing, so it's awesome. Nicole Bradley, she cashed as well. Katrina Allen. Not sure what happened. She had some pretty low rated rounds.
She had a very bad first round. Very bad first round out at Swope. I ran into her that evening, and she, diplomatically speaking, she didn't like that course. I don't know if that's because of the performance or otherwise, but she wasn't happy with the course. And you know, when you have that kind of first round performance, that's tough to bounce back from.
I agree. Yeah. Some other names that we all know and love. Elaine King. She did not have a great showing. Not sure what happened there, but was really hoping to see her beat out some of these women that are
young
whippersnappers. Half her age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few. I mean, I guess it kind of evens out. There's quite a few women that ended up at the top of the leaderboard who are some newer names, who haven't been there quite as much. And then some of our women that we're used to seeing at the top didn't have quite as amazing performances. But
I mean, it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same in MPO. I mean, looking down at the second 10, you know, into the 20s, if you will, on MPO, like you got Greg Barsby. He battled back to come tied for 11th, but I mean, some of the big names in the sport, you know, Paul Uleberry, 18th.
Yeah.
Jeremy Colling. Oh, wait, no. Am I in the wrong? I'm on the wrong day here. Hold on. Let me get on the right day. Is that right?
Yep. Jeremy Colling took 23rd.
23rd. But he had to shoot like a 1070 rated round the final round to come back. Like he was in 50 something. And yeah. I mean, even, you know, Nico and James Conrad, all those guys. So it's interesting. I wonder if it's the courses there or if it's just people getting hot because it was a 3-round tournament, or if we're starting to see like this sea change in both divisions of younger people coming in. It's really exciting to watch. But then on the other hand, yeah, for the people that you know and love from watching over the last few years, it can be a little more difficult. It's a little heart wrenching sometimes.
Yeah.
Human. Yeah.
That's true. So, most of us.
But most of us. One last thing, or two real quick things I want to touch on before we are joined by Eagle McMahon. Going back to round two with the out of bounds that Eagle had on the island, we're going to have a short rules break coming up from that with Robert Leonard. So he's going to break that issue down, and we'll ask Eagle about it as well. It was kind of a big shift in the second round. I think it played into his mentality the third round. We will find out. And then there was also another odd rules scenario that happened the final day. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to mention all of the names involved just because that's not really the necessary part of it. But basically what happened is one player, I believe it was Joel Freeman, was on one card behind another card that had a couple of players who are known for a little bit of a slower pace of play.
Mm-hmm.
And Joel actually went up to their card and gave them a warning for pace of play, for you know, going over time. And I guess went up and did it a second time. And now, you know, someone from another card can give you a warning, but they can't enforce something that would give you a stroke. But someone on your card can. And so basically what happened in this situation is Dole Freeman went up a second time, told them it was a time violation, someone on their card confirmed it, and those players ended up being stroked. So it was a very odd situation. I don't know how often we hear about something like that happening where someone on another card issues the warning because of pace of play, and someone on that same card confirms it. But it's something that happened, very interesting situation. But the biggest thing I took out of that, I have to give like major credit to Joel Freeman.
He's
a young player. No one wants to call people out on time because it's just awkward to do.
Yeah,
that took major guts for him to do that. But I love that he did it because it's something that's very impactful when you have certain players going over the 30-second, taking, you know, 45 seconds, a minute to line up shots, it really does slow down the pace of play. So I commend him for doing that.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, and those people may not know that they're doing that. I mean, time is different for every individual. So they may be like, oh, I took 3 minutes. That seemed like 30 seconds. That's crazy. I had no idea that I do that. Yes, I'll be more cognizant of that next time. So that's probably not, I mean, that's very dramatic example, but I feel like if another player comes up to you, then at least you can be like, okay, well, this is obviously an issue that others are aware of. Maybe I need to be a little bit more self-aware. So it's all just helping each other learn and, you know, continue to grow that in our sport a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like if we do want to keep having this sport grow and progress to where we want it to go and where a lot of people want it to go, you can't be afraid to enforce the rules.
Yep.
That's just all it comes down to. So interesting situation, interesting how it got brought up, but glad to see it handled. You know, and we've seen that earlier this year with very public rules displays, people calling out for foot faults and things like that. I honestly know it makes for uncomfortable situations now, but I think if people start doing it more, it won't be uncomfortable eventually. It'll just be part of the game. So I hope we see more of that.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so we're going to take a break, and then we are going to be joined by Eagle McMahon. So please stay with us here in just a moment on PDJ Radio.
Hi, this is Robert Leonard, PDJ Marshall and Tournament Director for the 2018 PDJ Amateur World Disc Golf Championship driven by Innova, and this is your PDJ Radio Rules Break. This week, we're looking at a situation that occurred this past week at the Dynamic Disc Glass Blown Open National Tour in Emporia, Kansas. The situation occurred in the Open Division on hole 16 in round 2. Eagle threw a tee shot onto the island green, and there was a question of whether Eagle's drive was inbounds or out of bounds. Per rule, Ricky Wysocki, Drew Gibson, and Simon Lazat, the other three members of the card, all provided their input on whether they thought Eagle's shot was inbounds. Ricky and Drew thought he was out of bounds, Simon thought he was inbounds. This created a discussion about how the benefit of the doubt rule applies. So what the benefit of the doubt rule is it provides a way to make a ruling when a group isn't sure. It also helps to make sure that calls are made uniformly and correctly across the entire course and an event. This rule is 801.03 appeals and comes up in Section A, and that says that when a group cannot reach a majority decision regarding a ruling, the ruling is based on the interpretation that is most beneficial to the thrower. So right off the bat, it sounds like Eagle's shot would have been in bounds. However, this is a very misunderstood rule. Benefit of the doubt does not mean one person disagrees. And this is addressed in the Q&A section of the rule book, which covers application of rules and really covers a lot of common scenarios that we see. So question number 4 in the Q&A deals directly with benefit of the doubt, and it says that benefit of the doubt only comes into play as a tiebreaker when the group cannot make a decision. And then it clarifies that if two people see a disc in and two people out, that is a situation. If a majority of your group thinks it's out of bounds, then it's out of bounds. So in this situation, there are three things to remember. First of all, Eagle, despite being the thrower, is a member of the group and has the right to make a call on his own throw. Secondly, benefit of the doubt does not apply in this situation unless Eagle now says he is in bounds and we would have a 2-2 tie amongst the group. And thirdly, had Eagle simply said he was in bounds, by rule in this situation, he would have been in bounds. So some might say that this would be unfair and that people might take advantage of this by simply saying, hey, I'm in bounds now. But remember, someone else in the group would have had to agree with it. And if only one person says you are in, then unfortunately, then the group decision would be out and benefit of the doubt rule does not apply. This has been your PDGA Radio Rules Break. This is Robert Leonard reminding you, as always, rules are your friend.
We're joined now by the 2018 Glass Blown Open Champion, Eagle McMahon. Eagle, how does that sound when we say that 2018 Glass Blown Open Champion?
I like it. It has a good ring to it. I basically say, I think that I was kind of expecting it. I hate to make it sound like I'm not grateful, because I'm very grateful, and the fact that it actually happened is phenomenal. But I've been planning it with my coach for ever since Vegas. I told him, this is the tournament I want to win. I think it'll be a great statement for me. And it just, it's nice to know that all I've done in preparation paid off.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, the biggest shot, obviously, everyone has seen it, and we've talked about it ad nauseum, but we're going to talk about it more. It was your shot on 16 the other day, running the island in the last round. Take us back to that, to the tee pad right then. I mean, it was a change in your game plan. You had some flexibility in it there, but just take us through the whole mental process of getting that shot ready and executing on it.
Yeah, it was a very tense time, because it was a great time, because I was the last person on the pad, so I could see what Ricky and Drew did before I made my decision. Because if anyone knows, hole 16 is par 3, I think just over 360 feet, island hole, like literal island surrounded by water. If you do not make the island, you go immediately to the drop zone. You have the option to lay up on the right, and it's a pretty simple layup. You should get your three, but you can definitely mess it up. So the way it unwinded was Ricky and Drew missed the island, and those two were in front of Simon, and this was kind of a really special thing to me, just because I'm a part of a team Dismania. My friend Simon Lizott, he is known for throwing these crazy lines, and he takes a spike hyzer. He did it all three rounds, and he executed it two out of three, including the final round. And he basically parks it. At the time, there was kind of a left to right wind, so it just kind of made sure that the hyzer held straight. And that's kind of one of the main concerns with the hyzer, is if you got to get it tight with the trees and super vertical. So the wind kind of allowed you to just throw it straight up and have it kind of straighten out the shot. So I don't know. He showed me the line. So I saw him park it, and I talked to him a little bit right before my shot. I'm like, what do you think? Should I lay up? And he just kind of gave me a little bit of a weird face. He went, kind of, maybe, if you want the tie. And then I just figured, oh, YOLO. drop the disc and go, here we go, Simon. Line up the spike hyzer, release it right on the island, maybe like a 20 to 25 foot putt in the headwind, nail it. And after that, it was party time.
Were you feeling like you needed to get some revenge on that hole from the day before?
It was definitely in the back of my head.
Yeah.
It was definitely a close call for those who don't know and just watch the Jomez coverage. I watched the Jomez coverage, and they basically didn't make a very big deal out of the whole situation at all, because it was a fast cut. They just showed it was OB, but we were actually there for probably a good 5-10 minutes making a ruling on whether my disc was in or out. And honestly, it was probably out of bounds, but it got to the point that it was so close and there was so much back and forth. I wanted to just get off the hole at that point, move on. Yeah. So I took the out of bounds stroke just to have the other guys maybe not think that I took advantage of a certain situation. So thinking in my head, if I can birdie this hole, win the tournament, it kind of erases the whole incident yesterday or the day before. And I don't know, it's kind of just a cool point to prove at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I noticed over on the tee pad of 17 afterwards, you were pretty stoic. Like, you looked pretty calm and collected. And I saw you kind of looking at something on your phone, which it looked like maybe like a contract with yourself or something like that. Is that something that you have that you've been working with this season that you'd be wanting to talk about a little bit?
That's a little confidential. I'd prefer not to mention that. But yeah, I think I'll that's something for the book written 10 years later.
I love it.
If you want to slip me a copy after the show, I'd really love to learn.
Yeah.
How to win a GBO next year. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look for that. Look for that release later on down the line.
Sweet. So I unfortunately was not at the event, but I was, you know, on my couch comfortably watching. And obviously your dad was out there, I noticed, and he was the first person that you hugged after you won. And just to give a little bit of intel on your relationship with your dad, how does he support you on and off the course since you've started playing professional disc golf?
He's my number one fan. I'd say he is definitely a coach type figure. He has a very big background in sports. He's been watching sports all of his life, and he has a really good understanding of mindsets and looking how players perform. So I may not have the greatest round, and he can pretty much dissect it to a T and tell me exactly what I did wrong in a very constructive way that I appreciate and I can build off of. Of course, since it's my dad, I'll be hesitant to listen to him sometimes. That's why I have my other coaches, Irene and Andy, back in Switzerland. But having him there, I don't know, it just kind of makes me feel like I want to win this for him since he went out of his way to come watch me. And yeah, it's kind of like we got into disc golf at the same time, but he supported me through disc golf all these years. We played so many rounds together, and just to share that experience with him is just really, really special.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really great to see your relationship. So that's awesome.
I know he also does advise you on the fashion front a little bit. So we do have to talk a little bit about the flower pants. You were going to bring them back. They're very, for people who are listening, maybe have no idea what is he talking about. Flower pants. If you go find Eagles round from the Veterans Park Open last year, there's Jomez coverage of the first round, and Eagles wearing some very, very high fashion flower print pants. And you were talking about bringing them back for this tournament, right, Eagle? What happened with that?
Well, I said at the beginning of the tournament that if I was going into the final day down one to three strokes, I'd wear flower pants for the final round. And luckily, I never found myself in that position, but I don't know if I would have done it anyway, because I told my dad that, and he's like, no, you don't want to go make a fool out of yourself on the course. We're trying to make disc golf a professional sport, and it would just cause too much talk. You'd bring unwanted attention. And of course, when I hear that, I'm like, oh gosh, Dad, come on. But I don't know.
It's such a dad thing to say, though. I mean, you can't blame him.
There's some truth to it. I'll probably leave it out for maybe, they might be A-tier pants. I don't know about NT pants.
Where did you find your flower pants for those interested in getting a pair themselves?
It was a lucky find at a thrift store, Buffalo.
That's a great store.
They're actually golf pants. They're stretchy golf pants by like Ralph Lauren or whatever. But they're really not that durable. I've worn them three times, and each time I've worn them, there's been a rip in the crotch. So grandma had her work cut out sewing them up. But who knows? The fans will see them at least one more time sometime soon.
I'm sure they can't wait. Someone who was there, i.e. Steve Hill, told me that you changed your tee-off song right before the final round. So what was your tee-off song for the first and second round, and why did you decide to change, and to what song did you change it to?
Well, I didn't know that they were doing it every single round. Usually in past GBOs, it would be the final round only. So they had the DJ right there, and he asked me what I want my tee-off song to be the first day. I'm like, oh, can you change it right now? I'm like, okay, sure. And like, can I change it all 3 days? Like, yeah, just tell me. So I did three different tee-off songs for the way I was feeling. So the first day, it was Champagne by Polyphia. That's kind of like a prog metal band. The second day was Not Going Home by Great Good Fine Okay. It's like a super poppy band. And then the third day, when I want to get business done, I did Glass Arrows by one of my favorite bands, Circa Survive.
One that they were supposed to play in 2015 for you?
No.
Okay.
I thought about doing that song, but I was thinking about the lyrics. Like, the song I wanted by Circa Survive, Get Out, is like, I can't get started from the part where I left off yesterday. That was like, that kind of sounded too negative to start my round with. I didn't like that.
I'm glad to hear like people actually taking the walk-up song choice like personally. I love it.
It's a very serious thing, and I wholeheartedly attribute my demise of the 2015 GBO to Rump Shaker. I absolutely hate that song because of that reasoning.
That's unfortunate because that's understandable. It's a classic.
I don't care if it's a classic. It's not classic for me.
Have you considered creating a playlist on Spotify and sharing it for all your fans?
I have like 20 playlists.
All right. Well, there you go.
People go follow me on Spotify.
There you go.
Love it. All right. Couple more for Eagle. We got, Joe Revere won the Masters Division, I think, by something like 9 strokes. And he had really nice things to say about you and, you know, Joel Freeman, Colt Montgomery, all the Colorado kids who are kind of coming up in the Open Division. What I want to ask you is, how has Joe Revere been influential on you over the years?
It's been a really, he's a very intimidating person to play with. He's very passionate out on the course, and it's kind of made me learn to maybe stick to my own game, not get affected by other players. And his skill level is so high, so it's basically like having, I don't know, a top tier player right in your backyard. So it's kind of helped me see the potential of disc golfers over the course of the years playing locally. And right when I started playing bigger tournaments, I'm like, oh, wow, it's just a bunch of Joe Reveres that maybe are a little less scary. But yeah, just having that kind of person. And he's been supportive of my career for sure. He's always told me, like, you just got to keep at it. No time, you'll be 10-20, 10-30, winning tournaments. He has been very supportive, and I can call him my friend. So yeah, just having that support from a figure on which you respect their game is really great.
So you guys teed off late afternoon, all 3 rounds. I know from experience, I'd rather tee off early just to kind of get it out of the way and feel fresh in the morning. And so what is your routine when you prepare going into these late rounds? Like, talk about your mindset, what you eat. Like, do you sleep in? Do you get up really early and go putt? Like, what do you do with all that time to kill?
It's really difficult sometimes because I feel like, for me, the perfect tee off time would be 10 o'clock because I could wake up, eat breakfast, get to the course around 9, warm up, play my round, eat lunch, and then you have some day left over. But when you're at 3 o'clock every day, it's kind of really awkward because you wake up, you don't know whether to wake up early, eat breakfast, sleep in. When do I eat lunch? I don't know. It's kind of, it's a difficult kind of thing to manage, but it's happened so frequently this year. Usually my goal is to wake up by 8 o'clock. I like to foam roll in the morning, eat some breakfast, kind of zone out, maybe watch some TV. Eat a little bit of lunch. It's really important to get the nutrition in, get your body going. And then the biggest thing is I always try to get to the course an hour before my round. No more, no less. I do a 20-minute warm-up where I don't even think about throwing a disc. It's all dynamic stretching and just like jumping jacks, cross jacks, push-ups, sit-ups, hip flexor stretches, that kind of thing. Then I start incorporating smooth shots, like throwing putters, working up to drivers, putting, and then by that time, I walk over 10 minutes before my tee time and I'm ready to go. So I definitely do have a routine, and it's worked this year. Something that I didn't really think about last year. It was kind of like, maybe I'll get to the course 2 or 3 hours before my round, just sit around. And that just, that's too much time to think about your round. And I don't know, it's playing a routine, being a part of a routine each day has just, it's really increased the likelihood for success.
Awesome. And that's obviously very apparent, and I am taking notes.
Awesome.
Like, things to do before afternoon rounds. So thank you for that.
Oh, no problem.
I know Sarah wanted to ask you one more food-based question. Sarah, give us your food-based question. I can't remember what it was.
Well, I'm not vegan, but I've been vegetarian for over 12 years. So I know what it's like to travel to, well, I live in Nashville, so there's like a lot of barbecue and like hot chicken and stuff like that that's not vegetarian friendly. But what do you do food-wise? Are you bringing your own food? What are you eating? Or just give us the lowdown on the vegan eats before your rounds.
Well, in Emporia, there's close to nothing. Radius has some good options, but you get sick of that kind of often. It was really important to me. We ended up staying in Topeka, which is an hour drive away on a toll road, just because I really wanted a kitchen in a house, because I cannot handle eating out. Because I feel like I'm getting no nutrition, I'm eating greasy food, and I'm not eating what I want to. So when I can cook my own meal, I like eating a lot of rice. I feel like I run really well off of just pure carbs, low fat, definitely a lot of vegetables. And during the rounds, it's important for me. I like to snack on like figs, almonds, dates, goji berries, cacao, like super hippie food. But that just kind of, that's what Boulder, Colorado did to me growing up.
That sounds delicious.
It's just, it's part of my roots, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Eagle, before we let you go, I'm going to hit you with the lightning round. These are the questions where I just ask a quick question. You give me the first answer that pops in your head. Are you ready?
All right, let's do it.
All right. Favorite course on tour?
On tour, Milo McIver.
Most difficult course on tour?
No course.
No. Oh, wow.
Good answer.
Bold choice, sir. All right. Tougher hole, USDGC number 17 or Emporia Country Club number 16?
17, USDGC.
Oh, all right. Best food, especially for you. I mean, best food on tour. Where can you find the best vegan food on tour?
Portland, Oregon.
All right. What's your favorite sport to either watch or play besides disc golf?
Basketball with my dad.
All right. You can have any superpower. What would it be?
Telekinesis.
I'm so intrigued by the people who pick telekinesis. I don't think I would want to know what other people were thinking. What would you be doing if you didn't pursue professional disc golf?
I'd be studying either to be like a nutrition coach, that, or some sort of business major.
What would you, no, I'm sorry. One person alive or dead that you'd like to have dinner with?
Jerry Garcia.
Ooh, good choice.
Good answer.
What's the last show you binge watched?
The last show I binge watched, Atypical on Netflix.
Okay. Since I know you're a music guy, you're stuck on a desert island, only get to choose one album to listen to the rest of your life. What is it?
One album the rest of my life?
That's a hard one, I know.
Gosh, this is not a lightning round style question. Grateful Dead, Dick's Picks, number 18.
All right, and then last one, cats or dogs?
Cats.
All right.
We're done.
I like
We're
it.
Done.
We are kidding. Done. I got We're good. Eagle, thank you for joining us and taking time out of your day. I'm sure you're probably going to be bombarded with interviews this week. So thank you. And again, congratulations. It's been great to see you out at these events this year and see the development of your game. It's been a lot of fun.
Great. I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me on. I love the show and continue to be awesome.
All right. Thanks, Eagle. You too. And we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. Welcome back to the show. Thank you again to Eagle for joining us. Sarah, what really jumped out to you from talking to Eagle today?
Well, like I said on the interview, I was taking notes during the routine part, and I was not joking. I think it's really smart to just limit yourself to getting to a course an hour beforehand, even though you may have like 6 hours to kill beforehand, because I feel like you can over warm up, or you can get into your head, you can talk yourself out of things even before you start the round. So that was really interesting, just hearing his routine in general. And then, of course, what he eats as a fellow veggie fan was really interesting to me. But yeah, I really enjoyed talking to him.
You guys and your veganism, vegetarianism. I had some really good barbecue yesterday in Kansas City.
Whatever.
No, the thing, you know what I really liked? I was really surprised to hear that he stayed an hour away just so he could have a kitchen. Like,
yeah,
I get that. Airbnbs and stuff were booking up real quick in Emporia, but that just, I also just have much more appreciation for that, because on day one, he came over to the Dynamic Disc warehouse and recorded a bunch of stuff with us like 4 hours before the round started.
Oh, wow.
So he had to come an extra hour, go out of his way to do that. So, Eagle, if you're listening, much appreciation. Thank you. Let's get into the hot rounds real quick from over the weekend before we move on with the show, because we got a few more things to get to. So most of the hot rounds in MPO came from, you guessed it, the Glass Blown Open. Ricky Wysocki shot the hottest round, a 1077 rated final round. It was an 11-under par, new course record at the Emporia Country Club, and he came in second there, as we know. The second hottest round, there were actually four of them. It was everyone in the first round. Eagle McMahon, Simon Lazat, Drew Gibson, Grady Hsu. There was a five-way tie for first. I think Ricky was also on there, wasn't he? They all shot 1071, just a tremendous opening performance. Jeremy Colling, in his final round, came up 23 spots to finish in 33rd place because he had a 1070 finish along with Kevin Jones. There was one hot round that was not at the Glass Blown Open. This came from Travis Morritt. He shot a 1067 at a B tier in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Came back, It was called the Coyote Howler, and he came back to win by two. He shot a 46 in the final round.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So hats off to Travis. And the fifth place hottest round this weekend, very fitting for the Glass Blown Open. Eric McCabe, his opening round at the Emporia Country Club, was rated at a 1064. So congrats to him. What do we have on the women's side for hot rounds? Were they all GBOs as well?
Yes, they were all GBO. So like I said earlier in the podcast, Paige shot a 998, her first round at Cottonwood Falls, just missing 1,000 by two. But she is no stranger to the 1,000-plus rated round, so I'm sure she will shoot another one soon. Second place was Rebecca Cox with a 988, her first round. We talked about her. She ended up tying for 15th. Third highest rated round was a three-way tie between Emily Beach, Jessica Weiss, and Sarah Hokum, and they all shot 983s during their second round. And then we've got 980 Lisa Fakus during her third round. And then rounding out the top five with a 960 was Lauren Butler during her first round, which was super hot because she is rated 880. So 80 points above her rating.
Wow.
Pretty hot. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I look forward to seeing what are going to be the hot rounds coming up this weekend, because we have the Tim Selinski U.S. Masters Championship. Did you like that segue? That was pretty good.
That was really good.
Getting better at this. So I'm also apparently being very humble about it. Let's look at the Tim Selinski U.S. Masters Championship. It's going to be taking place in Crown Point, Indiana at the Lemon Lake Disc Golf Center this weekend. That's home of the 2010 and 2013 Pro World Championships. It's going to be a great event. It's the fields are a little bit smaller. Obviously, anything's going to look smaller compared to the Glass Blown Open over last weekend. But you've got 60 players in the MP40 division and 9 players in the FP40 women's division. 272 total players are going to play a combination of, gold and silver layout at Lemon Lake. They also have, or the gold and silver course, and they also have a blue course and a white course. Gold Gold course is the longest at about 8,500 feet in a par 64. Silver, which I assume is where the women are playing, is 6,530 to the par 60. And then the blue and white courses are right around that same distance, if I recall correctly. So it should be fun. There's going to be, I think we're actually going to have Central Coast Disc Golf is going to be there filming, and the disc golf guy. So there will be some video footage of this. It is a PDGA major, so we will have coverage of it. We'll be doing, you know, PDGA live instead of UDisc live scoring. We'll have some articles and stuff like that. So it should be a great event, Sarah. I don't know. Do you know much about Lemon Lake? I haven't been there personally. Have you been to Lemon Lake before?
Yes, we were up there for a weekend road trip a couple of years back, and I believe I played the gold course, and I think there's a red course too.
You are correct. There is a red course.
Yeah. So we played the gold course, which is the longest course, a lot of open holes with some long grass, which I assume plays out of bounds. And then the red course that we played, which looks like they're not playing for this event, was very tightly wooded.
I think the other divisions are playing that.
Oh, okay.
I just put the pro, the MP40 and FP40.
And the great thing about this is that there are multiple courses all in the same area. There's a little pro shop there. It's fairly close to Chicago. We were staying in a hotel in Crown Point and then went up to Chicago that night for dinner. So, yeah, lots of stuff to do and convenient course placement. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing some of the scores that come out this weekend.
Yeah, and you should be because there is a pretty strong field. On the men's side, you've got Johnny McRae, Barry Schultz, Eric McCabe, Dave Fellberg, Patrick Brown, Mike Mosier. A name I'm very intrigued by, Ray Johnson. I didn't realize he was Masters age now. He showed up at a couple events really well last year, the year before that. Don Smith, a lot of guys who have just been around for a while. The women's field, not quite as deep. I'm guessing... I'm kind of bummed Dez isn't going to be there. I'm guessing she's still kind of injured.
Elaine's not there.
Right. And she was just at GBO.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if she just chose between the two of those. So I don't know. What do you think? I think we should do some picks for this event as well as the, wait for it. I have to read the whole title. Arby's DFW presents the Nick Hyde Memorial Pro Weekend powered by Innova, driven by Heiserbaum.
Ooh. What is the character count on that one?
A lot of characters.
Yes.
But a lot of characters means a lot of sponsors, so
yes.
No problem with that. But what we're going to do this week then is we're going to make our picks for just the top, just the winner in each of those two events, given that the field is maybe not quite as deep over at the Selinsky U.S. Masters and the Nick Hyde Memorial isn't on one of the tours, but it is a big A tier. So I want to make sure that we're not missing anything else from Tim Selinsky Masters. I think the biggest thing from that is I look at this event and I see, they had Worlds there in 2013 and 2010. So I go back and I look at who won Worlds there those years. 2013, Paul McBeth, not exactly Masters aged yet. So he's not going to be playing there. Eric McCabe, on the other hand, won his World Championship there, and this... he is now in the Masters division and playing this event. So that's interesting. The other interesting thing that I looked at, without looking, because I know you like to peek at our notes, Sarah, sometimes when I ask you these questions that I want you to not
no.
cheat on.
Okay.
Who, both times at Worlds, who do you think came in second place? Give me a guess. Same person.
Oh, my gosh. 2010 and 2013. Oh gosh, Johnny McRae. That's a terrible choice. That's not a terrible choice. I didn't mean to say that.
Well, no, but in terms,
I just can't.
Oh, gosh. I got what
there's just so many names flooding through my head.
Well, it was Dave Fellberg, who was also playing this event, and I appreciate that you didn't cheat by looking at our notes this week.
I didn't.
I thought that
I'm
you
trying
were maybe,
to be honest.
I thought you were maybe acting a little bit.
Maybe I was.
Maybe you were. Well, you acted too well. Then you could have gotten it right. So Fellberg came in second place. So, with that in mind, Sarah, it is your week for picks first. We didn't have time to go back and calculate all of the points that I accumulated from GBO, but because
all
there
right,
were just so
right.
many of
Don't
them.
Don't get too cocky now.
but I did pick Eagle and I did pick Paige. So, I got both of them. I think I picked Val for top five, and Devin Owens. So I don't think I hit with my top fives, but I definitely hit with my winning picks. But you still got plenty of points on the FPO side. I think Paul did finish out of the top 10, or no.
Well, I went Wysocki.
You went Wysocki.
I went Wysocki and Dickerson. So I got some points for Wysocki. And then I went Katrina Allen and Sarah Hokum for my top five.
So you got top five.
But I got some points from Sarah Hokum. Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't beat you as bad as I would like to think I did. So anyway, though, it's your call. Why don't you give me your picks for Pro Masters 40 and Pro Masters Women 40 Plus in Crown Point?
Okay. So I am picking Barry Schultz to win the Tim Zielinski's Masters because he's really good.
Because he's Barry Schultz.
Because he's Barry Schultz. He's got a lot of titles. He's played a lot this year. Not very many huge events, but he's playing pretty solidly. He knows his way around some woods. And I just like the guy. He's a good guy.
All right. That's a good choice.
So there you go. So I'll give you my women's choice as well. Okay, so I'm going with Leslie Todd to win Pro Masters. She's played a lot of events this year. Her rating has gone up since the beginning of the year. She's a solid player. I've played with her before. Just really impressed with her in general. And she's pretty competitive, and I think she can take it home.
All right, very nice. So I like storylines. And there are a couple of good storylines for me in the men's division, which that doesn't really always translate to things on the course, but let's have fun with it anyway. So first one that I mentioned is Fellberg coming in second place twice at Lemon Lake. And so I'm thinking, man, Fellberg's been playing pretty well lately. Maybe he goes in there and finally gets revenge on Lemon Lake. But then there's another storyline of Eric McCabe, 2010 world champion, going back to Lemon Lake and taking the U.S. Masters Championship after he helps shepherd in the largest disc golf event in history in his hometown. So I'm gonna go with Eric McCabe still being on the GBO high, and I'm going to take him to win in the men's division. But it will not surprise me if I am wrong and Fellberg wins. I feel like it's a revenge game for him. And then in the women's division, I'm going to go with Courtney McCoy. She's the highest rated player in the field. I think that says enough right there. She's a strong contender. She contends half the time when she plays in open too. So, or in open women. So I'm looking forward to see what she does this week. If we go over to the Arby's DFW presents the Nikkei Memorial Pro Weekend powered by Invod, driven by Heiserbaum.
I can't believe you just said that.
I can't get enough of it. I love it. Like, it's so silly on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's phenomenal because it just means that Matt Seary, the tournament director, has been pounding the pavement and getting sponsors. And that's what you have to do to run a big tournament. So props to him for that.
True.
I don't mean it to make fun. I just think it's amazing. And we have a pretty stacked open field there. You've got Macbeth, Wysocki. We didn't even ask Eagle about it, and he's playing it.
No.
Nate Sexton, Bradley Williams, Chris Clemens, Germ, Phyla. I mean, almost everyone. I'm trying to think who's not on this list. Simon is not playing, so which is kind of a bummer because he won this event a couple years back.
Doesn't look like Doss is playing.
Yeah, no Doss. So most of the guys who are like out on tour all the time are there. I know AJ Risley. I talked to him. He's coming back because his dad's actually running an event out this way. In Oceanside this weekend that I'm going to go check out. It's the challenge at Goat Hill, so I wanted to give that a little shout out. It's a B tier. So AJ will be coming back to that and hopefully getting some Waffle House along the way because he's going to be going like 12 weeks without Waffle House.
Oh my gosh.
He's going to get the shakes if you know AJ Risley.
Gross.
yeah, he loves Waffle House. And it's good stuff. And the women's division, it's Sarah Hokum, Katrina Allen, Jessica Weiss, Jennifer Allen, and quite a few others. But let's remember back to last year. This one was the first of the season last year because I think this one before GBO last year or was it after? I can't remember. Either way, this was one of the ones last year that got canceled because of weather in the final round. So what happened was Hokum and Katrina ended up tying because they didn't get to play it out, and Macbeth won in the men's division. So now we have all the context we need for Sarah to make her picks. Go ahead.
All right. I'm going to start with the ladies. So I'm picking Sarah Hokum. She had a very strong run this past weekend at GBO, and she's been playing really, really strong this whole season. Her putting's been coming together. She's been making some really impressive jump putts, and she did split first place last year, so she'll probably be coming back for some redemption. So that's my pick.
Okay.
And she has the same name as me.
That's true. That's always a good reason to pick somebody.
Agreed.
Do you want to make your men's pick?
Oh, yes, yes. I just blacked out for a second.
That's
okay. So I picked Ricky Wysocki to win last week, and he came so close, but I'm just going to keep it going and pick him again this week in hopes that he can do it. So that's right. My pick.
That's
going Ricky.
One. I am struggling on this one. I think in the women's division, I have to go with Katrina. She really had an off week at GBO. We know she can play better. She played well here last year. I think she goes, although I know, was it her? No, maybe it's Jessica Weiss who doesn't like playing in Texas as much, although she's playing there. I'm going to stick with my gut. I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
The men's side, I'm really struggling. Like, it's just, the field is so deep. I want to believe in Paul McBeth. I talked to him quite a bit this weekend, and basically what it boils down to for him is his putt is off right now. It's just off. He hasn't been practicing as much. He just moved into a new house.
They have a really cute puppy.
They have an adorable puppy, yes. So when you move into a new house, that kind of takes precedence over other things. Like, life gets in the way. I get it. And for him to still be playing as well as he does, it looked like he had a rough round, the final round at GBO, but really he's the type who, when he's behind, he's going big. And that means bigger mistakes if they don't happen. So, I really, really want to pick him here because he's still there. And I feel like he still has plenty to prove to people. I'm worried about his putt. And I look at the rest of the field though, and I don't know. I feel like I'd be convincing myself to pick anyone else. I actually really was thinking about Nate Sexton this week because he played pretty well at GBO up until, I think he slipped a couple spots in the final round. So I'm going between Paul and Nate. And literally what I'm going to do is this. I have a mini on my desk right now. It's from Whale Rock Disc Golf Course at Castoro Cellars, which is in Paso Robles, California. It's a stunning, beautiful course. You're throwing over vineyards. It's really neat. And heads with this stamp is going to be Paul McBeth, and tails is going to be Nate Sexton. So here goes nothing, flipping this on my floor. And it's going to be Nate Sexton for my pick this week.
I like your style.
Hey, sometimes you got to change it up a little bit.
Yeah. All right.
So we'll see what happens.
We'll see what
Go Nate. Nate. All right. We got to wrap up the show, but before we do that, real quick, this week in disc golf history, we're going to go back to 2008. 2008, and this was the Steady Ed Memorials Masters Cup in Santa Cruz, California. This was actually the fifth time it was a national tour event, and Steve Rico was the winner there. He took home $1,600, $1,640 for his troubles. At the time, he was rated 1030. He shot a 1063 rated final round to beat Avery Jenkins, Dave Fellberg, Nate Doss, and Ken Climo. I mean, the field was stacked back in the day. It was a huge field. Even McBeth was there. He was sixth place. Anthon came in eighth. And then over on the women's side, Val Jenkins won this one. She shot a final round like 13 points above her rating. So the reason I just wanted to bring this one up, you know, we were looking back at, I was looking back for something historical and, you know, Masters Cup is one of the older events out there. This one being in 08 doesn't feel terribly significant, but it is going to be our next NT in a few weeks. So I just wanted to point out one that fell on this week, and it's just, you know, it's one of those classic courses, classic events you get, a lot of the West Coast people out to play it, and I'm looking forward to it. So I just wanted to kind of use that to segue into the next national tour event in about 3 weeks. So keep your eyes open for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Sarah, I think that was a good show today. It was really nice to have Eagle on.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to him. was great.
I enjoyed having you on for the interview. So we got to figure out how to make that happen more often. That was fun.
I'll have my people talk to your people.
All right. Sounds good. Until then, if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to subscribe. We are at all of your favorite podcasting apps, I believe. We're even working on Spotify pretty soon. It should be there. We put in the application for it, but they're being a little slow. So tell Spotify to get us. And if you've got any feedback, let us know. It's radio@pdga.com. We appreciate you listening. For Sarah Lamerson, I'm Steve Hill. That was PDGA Radio, and we'll be back next week. Until then, grow well. Take care.